Blog Talk Radio.
Opportunity. You're listening to Talk Straight. This is your host, Reverend Reuben Dockery. We're grateful that you join us tonight on this December 22nd. Some of us are preparing for the holidays, for Christmas, which incidentally falls on a Sunday this year. But then after that, we'll be looking at a brand new year. And we ask ourselves often, where we've come from, and how far have we come. Tonight, our topic is the evolution of blackness in America from 1920 to 2012. But first, let me share with you what the nature of our show is tonight. Talk Straight is an online radio format designed to assist BFC Institute in reaching a national audience. Weekly topics will focus on real issues confronting families and communities. Reverend Dr. Reuben White, Dr. Sr. is the host. He will engage experts at various times and disciplines of study and listen to the audience as they share in provocative conversations. This show will serve as a catalyst for sharing relevant information, not just in one community, but across the nation. So we are grateful that you have joined us tonight. And we have with us, as always, our good friend and panelist, Pastor Ricky Waller. And we will introduce him formally. He'll have some words to say in just a little bit. But as we normally do, particularly for those of you who are just tuning in, we give some backdrop or context for our conversation throughout the show tonight. The number is 657-383-0944. Please feel welcome and free to give us a call and share in our dialogue. We will put you in queue and hear from you, hear your comments, your questions, your thoughts. Again, that number is 657-383-0944. We're at a time now where many people are somewhat disheveled and not sure what to do next. They're upset, frustrated, and many are looking for real answers. Some have been looking for a long time, specifically when it comes to heritage and cultural identity. I have talked to many people about the concept of what it means to be black, some Europeans as well as Afro people. Tonight we're going to talk about the evolution of blackness in America from 1920 to 2012. The context for our conversation is anthropological in nature. In other words, we're looking at one particular subgroup in America. We have many in this diverse culture, but we're looking specifically at this one. We want to answer these questions. Just what makes a person black today? Who identified Negro people as black? And what is the matter of black lives? So if you all will bear with us for the next 10, 15 minutes or so, we're going to give some background, some context for this show and move toward answering those questions. A mutation is the act or process of changing an alteration from the original state, form, or qualities. While many have taken great offense to the proscriptive subcultural expression, Black Lives Matter, quote, end quote, it bears noting that there is a rational explanation for its mutative origin. And I say mutation because it has evolved in such a way in a somewhat abnormal fashion. I think you'll understand that in just a second. Arguably, the cultural transformation occurred over a period of about 92 years, from 1920 to 2012. Briefly, let us examine how people first described by the Portuguese and the Spaniards as Negro in the 14th century have morphed into the social identity of the now capital B-L-A-C-K, Black, hence the birth of Black Lives. At least three social movements can be identified in this process, in this evolution. First, the Harlem Renaissance was a literary, artistic, and intellectual movement that lit the fire of a new Black cultural identity. People had been known, as I mentioned, by the Portuguese and the Spaniards, who were the first people to deport human beings from Africa in the slave trade, and they referred to them as Negroes. But again, this Harlem Renaissance lit the fire for identifying Black cultural identity after 1865, the freedom of former slaves, and during this era where, again, artistically, literary expressions and intellectual thought flow among Black folk, particularly in the Harlem area of New York. A prominent author and arguably the father of Blackness, Claude McKay, was from Kingston, Jamaica, but lived in America. He encouraged Negro and colored people to express self-determination by rejecting the classification of being a Negro or even colored and assuming self-will by identifying themselves as Black people. Now, what he taught was that functionally, the meaning of Black, and it's used not as a description, as an adjective with a small b, but with a capital B, means to be strong, to be overcoming of any adversity, any setback, any problem, as did the slaves as they survived slavery since 1619. He went on further to say it means to be in possession of universal civil and human rights endowed by God, worthy of dignity and respect. During this era, it was intended to be taught as a principle order for future generations to grow and identify themselves, as opposed to just a simple fad. Something happened, though, because some years later, around 1960 or so, after the failure of various social organizations, such as the Universal Negro Improvement Association, started by Marcus Mosiah Garvey Jr., and the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, started in New York, New York, with Du Bois being one of the founding members, and that great organization started by Dr. Martin Luther King, the Southern Christian Leadership Council, just to name a few. A political activist and author by the name of Eldridge Cleaver helped to start a movement which called for the picking up of guns. No more being nice guy. Pick up your guns and come to the immediate defense of Black people in America. This group was called the Black Panther Party. It reinforced the concept of black rights and national self-determination. After this movement came, though, and over a period of time, as a result of a lack of understanding, young men took the idea of grabbing the guns, but they were also fed with things like dope and prostitution and gambling and hustling in certain poverty-stricken areas. And from that, you had gangs to evolve, as well as the rise of major incidents with conflict with police in poverty-stricken communities. And all of a sudden, you had this massive distribution of drugs and alcohol and things that led to the social destruction of lives in predominantly black communities. Well, this kept going. I mentioned from 1960 through the 70s and through the 80s, and you had many people being locked up for possession of drugs and things of that nature. By 2012, a young man lost his life in Sanford, Florida, as a result of a terrible incident, and it led to the rise of a new movement. First, as we mentioned, you had the Harlem Renaissance movement, then the Black Nationalism movement, as indicated by the Black Panther Party, sparked from teachings of people like Malcolm X and others. And now we have, since 2012, young people, millennials between 18 and 30, identified largely with what is known as Black Lives Matter movement. The following quote is from an interview with the founder of a recently organized Black Lives movement. Her name is Alicia Garza. She states, "I created Black Lives Matter with Patrice Coolers and Opal Tometi, two of my sisters, as I call to action for black people after 17-year-old Trayvon Martin was posthumously placed on trial for his own murder and the killer George Zimmerman was not held accountable for the crime he committed. It was a response to the anti-black racism that permeates our society and also, unfortunately, our movements. Black Lives Matter is an ideological and political intervention in a world where black lives are systematically and intentionally targeted for demise. It is an affirmation of black folks' contributions to this society, our humanity, and our resilience in the face of deadly oppression." She goes on further to say, "We are humbled when cultural workers, artists, designers, and techies offer their labor and love to expand hashtag Black Lives Matter beyond a social media hashtag. Opal, Patrice, and I created the infrastructure for this movement project, moving the hashtag from social media to streets. Our team grew through a very successful Black Lives Matter ride, led and designed by Patrice Coolier and Darnell L. Moore, organized to support the movement that is growing in St. Louis, Missouri. After 18-year-old Mike Brown was killed at the hands of Ferguson's police officer, Darren Wilson, we hosted national conference calls focused on issues of critical importance to black people, working hard for the liberation of our people. We connected people across the country," she said, "working to end the various forms of injustice impacting our people. We've created space for the celebration and humanization of black lives," end quote. As I conclude the monologue here, I want to make an observation. I find it particularly interesting that after what was started in 1920 as a drive for the identification with blackness by Claude McKay and other Harlem Renaissance writers and figures. Of course, there was a woman, Zora Neale Hurston, involved as well. We don't want to slight her, but it was led primarily by men. And then as we moved with, in time with the Nation of Islam, we moved with Malcolm X and his teaching and the organization of Afro Unity subsequently. And then, as I mentioned, Southern Christian Leadership, the NAACP, and many others. Interestingly enough, these young ladies, these three black young ladies, in 2012 saw that they apparently failed to do what was necessary to make them and others they knew feel safe. So they felt like, interestingly enough, that neither Eldridge Cleaver, Claude McKay, or any of those people did enough, I'll even say Dr. Martin Luther King, to make us feel secure. So we as women are going to take the lead to fight for the determination and security of black culture in America. The number is 657-0944. Please call, talk with us. Brother Pastor, how you doing, sir?
I'm good.
Hello?
How you doing?
Good, good. I trust you heard my monologue.
I did, brother. I did. Very interesting.
Where are you at with that? We are in a day and time where black men can't give enough to lead us. So our sisters now feel as though they must take the mantle.
Well, I always have believed and still continue to believe as I learned and I got in contact with the knowledge and the wisdom of God and his purpose and plan for mankind.
Mm-hmm.
Again, hadn't always known, but is always interested in having the sisters to step up and do all that they can do to be a part of what God's plan is. Now,
okay.
I discovered, and he made it plain to me, that he's mm-hmm. the same yesterday, today, and as well as forever. So I have nothing against
all right.
women, because I think it's one of the greatest gifts that I discovered that he had given man. You know, when he
yes,
said
it is. Yes, it is.
he brought the man a woman, you understand, for her to help him.
That's right.
And I
that's
always
right, that's
knew
right.
that's the purpose and the plan. Now, I had the wrong
yes.
idea years ago. You see,
okay.
because of the
okay.
things that I didn't know how to treat women. So I knew that I went according to what I knew. You know how it is a thing called you go for what you know. And if you
right,
don't know
right,
no better,
right.
you won't show any better.
You go
so
with what you know.
I say that I failed. Yeah, I just went for what I
right.
knew. And I failed
okay.
in that
okay.
area. But thank God it wasn't intentional. You see?
I see.
And so when I came into the knowledge and the wisdom of God, you say, okay, you had the right idea. You just
mm-hmm,
had the wrong
mm-hmm.
instructions.
Mm-hmm.
So the women would help me, and if you get
mm-hmm.
my book, you'll discover that I made it known that they were to help me, but I didn't go about it the correct way and everything.
Okay.
So it's always good to have the woman to be of help. She have a place, man. And I think, again, she's one of the greatest.
I hear a but there, though.
Yeah, I hear a but.
But
it's always good to stand firm and let the man take his rightful place in society. You see what
okay.
I'm saying? And make a stand.
Okay.
And so men have done a lot of failing in that area for the most part. A lot of us have, because I just be the first witness. I say, I did. I failed, man. And
that's
because,
it. I'm
you
sorry.
Know, yeah, my people perish for the lack of knowledge.
Lack of knowledge.
Everybody
right.
know anything. Yeah, not everybody know anything about the Bible. But, yeah, it's time for the man to make a stand and do all that he can do and thank God for the woman to stand by him. But
right.
for the woman to
right.
take and do what a man is supposed to be doing, it just doesn't sit well, I'm sure, with the kingdom of God system.
Mm-hmm.
And again, do all that you can do. Go ahead.
I like the way you frame that, that there is a dire need and importance for the role of women in any culture, in any society.
Oh, man.
We won't exist without,
oh,
we wouldn't exist without it. James Brown claimed it like this. It's a man's
yeah.
world, but it
See,
would
that,
not
that
be nothing without
nothing,
a woman
man.
or a girl.
Yeah.
But I heard people over the years, Pastor, talk about Dr. King and how he was, his words were exemplary of how we should organize and behave ourselves in the context of America, the unity and resolving racism. But interestingly enough, there is a piece that I seldomly hear played during Black History Month and other venues like that. I took my children to his museum down in Atlanta, and we purchased some things for them. I just wanted them to have some artifacts, some personal artifacts. They're adults now, but that was one particular piece that I saw there that really captured my attention, and it really told where Dr. King really was in terms of Black men and their role and how they should identify themselves in the context of political, social, economic freedom and identity in America. If you don't mind, I want to share a couple of minutes of a speech, a very rare speech that many people, it doesn't seem like are aware of this, but I just want to share this with the listening audience. On the other side, as we'll come back, and the number is 657-383-0944. I do have a question I want to ask you, Brother Pastor, and we hope some others will call in tonight. After this brief dialogue, we'll come right back. So, you're listening to Talk Straight. This is your host, Reverend Dr. Ruben Doc. We have on with us our good friend, Pastor Ricky Waller, who is very supportive of our calls here, particularly for this show and our traveling lecture circuit. Number 657-383-0944. Give us a call. Pastor? What Dr. King was referring to in that message is the fact that until recently, I'm going to say within the last 30, 40 years or so, in the English lexicon, have they changed black not to have such negative meaning associated with it. If you look at the unabridged dictionary that goes back and give you some of the earlier meaning, you see how systematically in the language it was associated with a lot of very, very, very negative things. So my question
mm-hmm.
today is just what makes a person black?
Okay. Interesting. That would be
I think if we can get that, that would help us, because there are young people who say, oh, you acting black because perhaps your pants are hanging down. You have either engaged in a robbery or been with someone in a robbery or engaged in gang activity or associated with gang members or done things that are socially unacceptable. All of a sudden, if you're a certain texture and you live in a certain area and you say you throw your food on the ground, your bags, your Burger King bag or whatever. I don't give advertisement to them, but is that black? I mean, what makes one black today?
Well, that's a very, again, interesting way to put it. But I would sum it up by way of saying when you hear something that you call stereotypes,
uh-huh.
that could be hidden very well from the way
I see
that you put that in the order that you did.
Okay, okay.
You know, and there's a lot of that going on. And where did it come from? You got cliches.
Mm-hmm.
And they become very popular.
Become
very, very popular.
Mm-hmm.
And it reminds me, and it can become an addictive behavior. Just the mentioning of that, you know, that can be said so much, so often, and it become a going thing. And you get used to it. And all
right.
of a sudden, you become the very thing that you hear. That's why the word says faith cometh by hearing. And hearing by the word of God. So if you're not hearing the word of God, you're going to hear the world's way. And I know what I'm talking about. I heard the world's way, so I became that I heard.
I see.
And I started to embrace that. So if they talk down on me and say these things about me, my thought pattern is what they thought about me. They tell me who I am from what they thought about me. And so if they call me a name that's foul like that, then I began to think, I'm that what they say that I am? What about
okay.
I'm a human being?
Right.
You see,
right.
God is no respecter of persons. So all those names, I don't want to get addicted to those names that I can be called and to start to embrace. So, you know, and it takes some learning and some getting used to and all those things, because the word black, I mean, I'm a black man. That's the way I came into existence, finding out. And then I discovered something. There was a whole lot of other nations that were added.
I see.
That I was called and things like that, you see. And so it was that I was being shaped up by someone who felt like they had a right to call me those things.
Okay. Okay.
And to stereotype my presence of being at a location or at some particular place that I didn't fit or didn't belong there.
Right.
But this
right.
is where you belong, right here. And this is what I can do. I can tell you, you know, what to do, and I can tell you how to do it and all that. See, I've already been addicted to something like that. See, that was a chemical that told me who I was.
I see.
So, you know, it's amazing on what not only a person can call you that, I mean, a place can call you that, a thing can call you that, and it's only fit
right.
for your kind.
Now,
it's a touchy name that you're talking about now.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what, if we go back and maybe place ourselves in the zeitgeist of the age of 1920, and put ourselves in the shoes of people like Anirban Timms and Elaine Locke and Langston Hughes and County Cullen and Claude McKay, you know. If we were to walk their walk, we would see that even after World War I, which wrapped up around 1919, black men did go to war. They weren't allowed, many of them were not allowed to fight on the front line, but they were in the kitchens and they cleaned up and they moved bodies and what have you. But still, when they came back to America, there was no respect for them, and there was this negative distinction on being black. So these men said, listen, we're going to define ourselves.
right?
Okay.
Even being a Negro was associated with something ugly and nasty and derogatory. Colored,
right.
If you were colored, of course, you had a little bit better experience because that suggested that you were mixed with the captors or the enslavers a little bit, right?
Oh, okay.
And many of those people had a few bit better opportunities.
Okay.
But for those who were dark-skinned and their dark in hue, there was a stigma, social stigma. So they said, listen, we recognize our darkness, and most Jamaicans, like Claude McKay and Marcus Garvey, they were very, very dark. They were from the Maroon people in Jamaica who refused to be mixed with the British when they came in. And so they went to the hills, and they fought to protect their culture, right? And so they were very, very dark. To make a long story short, this is where this stigma of blackness came from. So they said, we recognize our hue and how dark and strong we are. And because we're resilient people, we're educated people, we're knowledgeable, we're going to define ourselves not as a description or an adjective, but we're going to assume the role of a noun, which is divine in English, as a person, place, or thing. So we are somebody, and we are black people. People to be respected about the world of God.
So who and how? Well, we stripped from the knowledge of who we were.
Wow.
Versus who
now,
we are.
See, that's a great question,
you know,
big brother. Because that's
strip,
what I was going
to. Me from that.
Wow. So now you asked a great question. In my monologue, I mentioned that it was the Portuguese and the Spaniards who first assumed they had some sort of power and authority over people of dark hue of Afro descent. When they decided to forcibly take them and send them over to Spain and Portugal and make them work as slaves, as indentured servants. And they cast the die and set the stage for the British and other folk bringing people from the western coast of Africa to the so-called New World in America, right? And this practice continued. But what also continued was the notion that you can strip them of their identity, of their heritage and their culture, and you can rename and define who they are.
And
so this was the brilliant. The brilliance of the Renaissance era was that these people became educated and knowledgeable of their heritage beyond the slave experience and the post-slave experience from 65 to 1920. And they said, we're going to define who we are intellectually. Now, something happened, though, Brother Pastor, and it seems to me that somehow the importance and the significance of all of that did not get properly passed on to the next generation. Are you walking with me?
Didn't. You said did not properly get passed down to the next generation. Lord, have mercy.
Here's why I say that, because Harlem Renaissance ended about 1930. A generation is about 30 years. By 1960, we had young people in the streets crying and fighting and engaged in riots in Detroit and in Florida and in California and places like that, right? And that's what gave rise to the Black Panther Party. Subsequently, you had Raymond Washington in the Purist Housing Project of Los Angeles, California, start the Bloods. And you had Stanley Tukin Williams on the other side of town start the Crips. You had David Barksdale Larry Hoover out of Chicago start the Gangster Disciples from the Black Peystone Rangers. These were people who said, we're going to protect our neighborhoods, our communities, right? You had the Viceroys to start by Thurston Goosby in Chicago and Raymond Lloyd to pick it up, basically. These were people who were saying, we were responding to the social economic pressures that keeps us sad and lonely. Are you walking with me?
No. Oh, man, you're touching on something now.
Somehow important information about who we are and what our purpose is, which defines what our day-to-day actions should be. You know, we had that guest on from Chicago who talked about how to raise a responsible, successful black male. Suppose that type of instruction was instilled in every urban home. I'm talking about in the ghetto. Where would we be in 2016?
I tell you one place we'd be on the right track. Where would we be? You know, very quick and speedily with an answer like that. I mean, I don't know a lot, but the question is where would we be? You know, it sounds like we finally got ourselves together, man, because what is it that calls us to turn on each other? Then this is supposed to be protecting our neighborhood. Well, what caused us to be so vicious one to another? Then this is my question to myself: is that what are you doing, you know, to protect your community? And then I discovered something about me: I'm corrupting my own community, man.
Lord have mercy.
Who can
cause
you to do that? That type of power that's gonna make me corrupt my community and whom I love and people there that I dwell with and I love, and then here I am purposely corrupting them without even knowing it. You know? And I'm trying to scare me to even think about it. So I played a major part in that ongoing nonstop corrupting my own neighborhood.
Right.
Without the intent to do it, man. You know?
Right.
So
that's interesting because go ahead. I'm sorry. Finish your thought. I apologize.
No.
Finish your thought. I apologize. You were talking about how you corrupted your community.
Yeah. You know, and I'm still stunned by that, man. I mean, I enjoyed the people that I was around.
Mm-hmm.
You understand what I'm saying? Playing in the yard and all of a sudden becoming playing in the backyard and things like that, you know, going out to the knocking on doors to try to empty someone's trash and, you know, and all those interesting things coming up, and then suddenly I'm supplying my whole community with drugs. That wasn't no plan of mine, man.
Okay.
You know, so I was enslaved.
Right.
I was enslaved.
Now, that's interesting.
You
know, it's interesting you bring that up because one of the things that happened in between 1920 and 2012, Ossie Davis, the actor, he wrote the preface to a book, which is really a documentary, entitled We Charge Genocide. And it was based off the Warren Report, where Chief Justice Warren, where they were ordered to do a study, federal government, to determine the effects of drugs and what have you on the black community. And social despair and Jim Crow and oppression. And what they found is they said the book was entitled We Charge Genocide because in their study they realized that drugs were deliberately distributed in the poorest neighborhoods who once couldn't afford them.
Yeah. You know,
so it became a norm.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And that's what I'm really still puzzled about. Because it is ironic, man, you know, that actually took place. And I know as a witness that it took place because I was there once. So, and I never blamed no one for me doing that. I just wanted to know, and I'm still seeking, how did that happen when I was just an innocent little boy? You understand what I'm saying? With no plan, that was not my plan. I was playing with a basketball that couldn't even bounce, man. And was more interested in the ball that couldn't bounce, you understand what I'm saying, just trying to make it work. And I ended up, you know, really having a thing going on with the basketball. But yet still, something stronger came through, man.
Right.
And intercepted that young, innocent boy's pattern of thinking. And
well,
then
now,
he
let's
ended
talk
up becoming what he became.
Let's talk for a second the impact that these things had on females, because I don't want to overlook the fact that part of me respect these three young ladies for wanting to take up or take the lead. However out of sorts and however potentially vulnerable that makes them, if I might say it in that way. Let's talk about the young ladies. How is it that when brothers were off their game, out of control, and I'm not saying this for everybody now, but we know there are far too many of them because this is why we have so many children being born without fathers in home. And those under those conditions, is it appropriate for the young ladies to say we're going to control the whole neighborhood and we're going to get rid of the crime, and or we're going to make the cry that Black Lives Matter? I'm kind of jumping ahead of myself here a little bit.
You know, we appreciate them by all means. That's still a form of a help. See, they still, to me, it's still a form of a helper, man. You understand what I'm saying? She's not going to step out of who she is and say the man can't do that, so I'm going to be. No, you know, I understand, you know, that they're concerned and they have that right to step up and do all that they can do to be a part of something that would cause change. You see?
Right.
But always a woman would always be a woman. Just like, for instance, I'll give you a good example. I brought my little girl up.
Okay.
And somebody may say, he's a good daddy and a good mama, a good father and a good mother. I said, no, he can never be nothing but a good father. He can never be a mother because he's not placed here to be a mother. He's placed here to be a father as he's a man.
Okay.
So, you know, a position that a woman has, she's placed here to be in the position that she's in, and that's a beautiful thing. And she's doing all that she can do, man. I thank God for her to stepping up and do some things that men ought to appreciate. That's what a helper would do, would step up and say, I'm going to help the man do what he's unable to do right now, and I'm still going to make sure I know my rightful place in society. I'm a helper.
Okay.
And, you know, and just step on and be all right with it, you know. And until the man come around and he decided to come around, your brother, we've been waiting on you a long time, you know, get back in your rightful position.
I was just going to say that. Wait a minute. Some of us now, bro, preacher, we just lazy and trifling now. You understand what I'm saying? And surely they got to keep on, you know, they got to keep the bloodstained banner and hold it up. You know, they can't just.
Yeah, man.
But that's
They've
interesting.
Done it so well that, over the years. Yeah.
Well, absolutely. Yeah, absolutely.
Over the years, man. Yeah, man. You know, she deserves a prop. She
but now, to prop, be black, man. They refer to Michelle Obama as a, quote, angry black woman, end quote. You know, there we go again. There we go again with the stigma. If you're angry, you must be acting like a black woman. Well, I've heard it said that there is no greater fear than a woman scorned. But they didn't say black, white, green, or purple. You understand? But now you and I grew up with black women in our lives. Have I got a witness? And we know what it's like to put your hand on your hip. You understand? And I mean full of hip. And to shake while you talk and you put somebody in their place. Is that right?
Yeah,
work that finger
right
and that
there.
Neck, big brother.
Yeah, something happened right there.
Well, I mean, it's
that's it.
It is
right
real
there.
Now.
That's
wait a minute. Now.
Yeah.
Let me say this: that I recognize it to be real, but don't put that stigma on black women, though. Are you walking with me?
No.
Just because they ain't with
your
foolishness and your mess, you understand what I'm saying.
Yeah. That's right. That's right.
But
that's right. It's a stand-up woman, maybe, you know.
Right. Well, and she know how to articulate and how to get you straight.
Yes.
Now, I mean, you know,
the
black woman that I'm most familiar with, she knew how to cut her eyes in a certain way. You know,
oh,
to let
man,
you know,
by
listen,
all means, man.
you have overstepped.
Yeah.
Your man.
That's right. Yeah, man. They know how to do it, brother. They know how to do it.
You know what I'm saying? I'm like, wait a minute, you're too pretty to be, act that mean. Come on, be like
that.
Don't be like
that. And then they get all about how pretty they are and all that. That's just
watch out, man.
Beauty is over then. You know, it goes back to that song, Beauty's on the Skit Beat. That, yeah, you know.
Come on, man. Come
on. They ain't thinking about no beauty or nothing. You know, that is.
No.
Got in line with something totally different. Yeah. Man.
But again, let me reference a piece of the conversation that was shared early from Miss Gaza. Interesting young lady, very interesting young lady.
Okay.
She talked about how their team began to grow. They started in 2012, and they began to grow from that point in St. Louis. I think St. Louis is one of the cities that they had the greatest feedback, right? It was interesting to me to find out that one of the black males that were with them early on in the St. Louis area, when the Ferguson riots broke out, a couple of days later, they found him dead and on fire in his car.
Oh, man.
I believe that was the brother's name was Darnell. They found him deceased in his car. He had been shot, I believe it was in the chest or the head, and he was on his car was set on fire. What was interesting to me is this brother was striving, as I understand, to try to bring some organization and some sensibility to the struggles of people in St. Louis. And some people didn't like that, man.
They didn't like
Now, I'm just making an assumption here. Somebody obviously didn't like him enough to take his life, and the manner in which he died was pretty brutal. I would wonder if, while others wanted to riot and express discontent with the system and the circumstance through violence and looting, if he were one of those who said, hey, let's not do that, and even his own people turn on him, decide to silence him, is that a black thing? Is that a black thing? Because sometimes we get this thing mixed up, Pastor. It gets somewhat confused and wires get mixed. You know, I saw a Caucasian young man once with braids in the head, his hair braided up, and he had gold in his mouth, and he had a long chain on and rings, and he was sagging his pants, and he wanted to impress me that he could be like, what's up, my N-word? You know, and I said to myself, how did I become your nigga?
Yeah, man.
You understand what I'm saying? I wasn't upset with him because I understood that he was he was just as lost as some so-called black folk are.
Okay.
Are you walking with me?
Oh,
see, I've learned not to be impressed when young brothers do the same thing, because they lost.
Well,
go ahead.
I thought about it according to the word of God again. You know, I was looking for a long time, and I found out that the word says if a man pretend to be something that he's not, when he's nothing, he deceives himself.
Right.
I'm pretending to be something that I'm not, then I'm deceiving myself.
Sure.
You know, trying to fit in, trying to be something that I'm not, you know, and that's a danger, man.
Well, where did this young guy get the notion that to impress someone, you must behave in a certain manner that is associated with being black? I must admit I asked the question knowing what the answer was, but it's for the sake of dialogue, you know. This is Talk Straight. If you're listening and you want to call in, we'll be happy to entertain your question, your comment, share in this discussion. Or even after the show is over with, if you want to email me, you can go to bfcinstitute.com, and on the home page at the very bottom, there's contact information. Send me an email, give me a call. Be happy to follow up with you. You can listen to the whole show in its entirety after it is recorded tonight. But give us a call here, 657
383-0944. But, Pastor, you know, it's interesting to me how in this conversation about what it means to be black, black people seem not to want to be honest about the very culture that they identify or say they subscribe to, right? You asked the question, who is it that started calling you that? You know, where did that come from?
Yeah.
And in reality, I mentioned that goes back to the 1500s, the Spaniards, the Portuguese, then the British, and then everybody else that would seek to subjugate you, take your best that you have to offer, and to force you to work laboriously for their gain, giving you no credit. Is that what it means to be black? To become a commodity?
Right, that's amazing, that means. That's what
you know?
Being black is. Yeah.
Is that what it's amounted to? You know.
So now,
go ahead.
So it's almost, you know, something that you would think, you know, if you had to say almost.
say almost.
And I would utilize the word almost because there was a time when I almost got free, but I didn't get free. And suddenly I finally got it. Now I'm no longer enslaved with that now. So now I realize that I'm somebody, man. How in the world I'm going to sit up and not think that I'm somebody today when I just learned that I am.
Right.
And once upon a time, discovered that I wasn't. So, okay, that's understandable. But today I have to go ahead and accept it, that God is no respecter of person. So since that holds good today, then I should make known of that to myself and say, now you're no longer enslaved because of your color. You know, you shouldn't think that way, so I'm not getting ready to stereotype myself and have to say black lives matter. Yes, you already know you black.
That I matter.
Be automatic.
I guess I
don't need no witness. You understand what I'm saying? If God is no respect of me, that this is the day you walk out of me. He's telling George and to be glad in it. He didn't say to bow down to no one, you understand, who have the authority over you. So why would I continue to be enslaved with something that's controlling me, man?
Okay.
I have to accept that if I'm not free now. But if I'm free, I should be free indeed.
Okay.
I shouldn't wonder. Today, I wonder how I'm going to be treated from any other ethnic group of people.
So what I'm hearing you say.
Yeah, go ahead.
No, what I'm hearing you suggest is that it's the opposite of letting people determine how you be. You tell them what to expect. You define for them what to expect from and what you expect for them in terms of your respect by how you carry yourself, how you represent your teachings and your culture, your family, the whole nine yards.
Life worth living, man. Yeah, go ahead, Pastor.
Right. Now, I was going to say, of course, when you think about the breakdown in the black family, it's very clear. Andrew Billingsley wrote about black families in America, and you remember Dr. Sanford from TSU. He was on with us.
Mm-hmm.
He was a student
mm-hmm.
of Andrew Billingsley back in the day. And
I
quote Billingsley a great deal in many of my writings. But he talks about how systematically the black family was disintegrated, and the role of the black man and the black woman affected how black children began to identify themselves, such that now, and we see this today, there are some young people, and again, I'm not saying everybody, but there are too many young people who feel as though because they have to hustle and get it the way they live, they're not really too keen on standing back and showing no respect to anybody other than themselves. Look what I've done. Forget anybody else. You heard one of the shows where we did a musical piece where the young man in the rap song, he said, I'm just down for my niggas. Forget everybody else. I'm down for my niggas.
Yeah.
You know, and again, hopefully tonight somebody will listen or is listening and will learn how we got to be where we are, but more importantly, where we need to be focused and deliberate about addressing this issue with young. If we ever get 1,000 young men in one room, Pastor, what we ought to be doing with them is hugging them and telling them that what we're talking about tonight is not real. Ain't no future in the front.
Yeah, it should be honor, man, amongst one another, and we have to learn that. You know, he talked about it again. I'm telling you, man. I was amazed when I found out, you know, what the Word of God speaks and what it lets me know. It tells me, it gives me information. It says, let's hear the conclusion of the whole matter. You know,
that's right. That's right. The whole matter.
In other words, that's including you and I. You know, so if that holds weight, if that's genuinely being presented to you and I, then we have a right to be able to stand firm on it and right with spreading the good news, you know, and tell others, you know, they should have the same rights within themselves to know that you are somebody, you know, in case that you are. Now, I remember a time when I was nobody, man. I remember the Word of God told me about that. You know, but when you become a chosen generation, you know, and that means that a chosen generation, that means you are selected on purpose to be in this generation. But now, here's a part of it. It says, who called you out of darkness.
Okay.
Now, if I'm in darkness, I don't even realize who I am, so I'm considered as a nobody.
Okay.
But if he called me out, and then I step out, I become somebody at that point. I may not be able to do everything I like to do, but at least I'm no longer in darkness anymore.
I'm aware. Hey, I'm much better. I want to talk about the other side of this, Preacher, but let me go to this, do this message. And when we come back from the message, I want to talk about the other side of black. If I might.
Okay.
And we're going to get to the question, what is the matter of black lives? But I want to get to this question of the opposite side of blackness. And give us a few minutes. The number is 657-383-0944. Give us a call. Love to entertain your question or comment. This is Talk Straight, your host, Reuben Dockery, and Pastor Ricky Waller tonight, December 22nd. We'll be right back.
Hey, they call me Pook. I'm from these streets. Somehow, I live to see my 18th birthday. I managed to graduate from juvenile detention to adult prison. People try to tell me I should grow up being a man. But I'm the best man I know. Somebody asked where I see myself 10 years. Man, I'm just trying to survive these streets day by day.
BFC Institute needs your help to reach the Pookies across America. Please support our traveling educational lecture series addressing perceived threats to African American males. To learn more, please visit us at bfcinstitute.com. That is BFCINSTITUTE.com. Simply click the red sticker for details.
You're listening to Talk Straight. This is your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery, with our very good friend and panelist, Pastor Ricky Waller. Conversation tonight is about the evolution of blackness in America from 1920 to 2012. We've just dealt with the question about just what it means to be black, and we were answering who identified Negro people as black. Pastor Waller, I want to ask you, it's been a long time coming, man. In a long time coming.
Yeah.
How do you
it has been that, bro.
How do you get a black boy and a white boy in the same room and get them to identify themselves as one in unity?
Oh man. Outstanding, bro.
Help me with that. What's
man,
the other side of that black?
Let me,
do you have to be black to get along with them? Go ahead.
No, brother.
Go ahead.
No, not at all, man.
Talk to me now.
I was integrated, man. I was integrated. You know, I talk about in my book how I was integrated and went to another school. Now, coming from all black school, you know, I was interested. Of course, you know, I love sports, and at that time, you know, they had a great basketball team, and when I seen them guys run out on the court, man, I knew I wanted to play with them, and that was at a school named Washington Junior High in Nashville, Tennessee. It was a junior high school. And
yeah.
I was already there in the seventh grade, and I, you know, a friend of mine, his brother played with them, and so he went and told his brother the next year I was going to go out for the team.
Okay.
Man, you know, next year came, man, I was integrated, man. I was transferred to a school called W.A. Bass Junior High, man. I said to myself, what a letdown.
Yeah.
And I didn't say that because it was a bad school or anything. It was just that I wanted to play ball with the guys that I knew with play. Nevertheless,
I went on
into high school. So I'm down at high school, school called Cone High School.
Okay.
And
okay,
it was this white guy. He's very popular. You know, he's tall, brother. You know, he had it going on down there and everything. And so anyway, to shorten the story up, you know, him and I was all right. He was in high school there. We didn't hang out together or anything, but we was all right. And so years went by. He heard about me, and he heard about my life had changed, and his daughter got caught up and strung out on drugs. And he said that she was out in the area in which I, quote, corrupted at one time. So he found out that's the area that she was in, sent for me. He called me, got my number.
Is that right?
He said, if anybody can do something about it, I know that Ricky can.
Are you serious?
I didn't say that.
Wow. Wow.
So he had confidence in me because he knew he was all right with me. He knew we hadn't been together in many, many years. We were just in school together. But he knew that we was all right enough that I wasn't going to say that I wasn't going to go and assist him in what he needed. I went out
to
search for
his daughter.
And she found out later on that I did that, and she just have a inward joy of knowing that one day she saved me.
God.
She took a picture of me and told her son and sent the picture to her dad. You know, and I tell you, man, That was one of the joys, and he responded in such a joyful way, man, you know. And I'm saying all that to say that, you know, can two walk together except they agree? He said two white, two black. He said can two walk together except if you agree upon.
But now,
so that's
hold on,
what
now,
I
let
mean.
Me push back on you. Hold that thought. Let me push back on you a little bit now. Hold your thought.
Yeah.
But now,
mm-hmm.
when
okay.
I've been stepped on, I've been spit on, I've been kicked and abused and bruised.
Yeah.
You know, you ain't
yes,
you ain't experienced that, man. You ain't experienced it. So how can
man.
I walk with you when I, you know, I'm hurting, I'm limping. You walking, but I'm limping.
Yeah,
well,
man.
I mean,
yeah, man. Yeah, definitely, definitely. And no, listen. This was my concern. My concern was not for the white people. Listen, I want you to listen to me now.
Yes, sir.
I corrupted my neighborhood. I didn't serve that stuff to other people.
Okay.
So my main concern, but I still didn't neglect the thought of knowing that he said his daughter was in the area.
Mm-hmm.
And he wanted to see if I could see her. So he gave me a description of her and everything, and I found out later on when I finally did see her, and now she's got her life together because she looked just like him. So when I discovered that, man, it was just a joy. So no, is it my fault? Because we still being looked upon as if that was me calling him to say that I was had a child. I stand in the area that quote where it was only white people at. You know, I don't know how that would sit with him or anything like that, or what he would have done. I think he would have done the same thing. But it's just that you stereotyped anyway, man. I mean, it's a lot of that that's still, it's still happening. It's still going on.
I would agree with you. Right. I would agree with you. And I think what I've concluded is the problem is there's a false sense of security in being able to say, because I'm black, you should accept what I do and how, you know, I interact with you, right? Well, everybody has a right to be who they are, right? The truth of the matter is, it's not about necessarily your skin complexion or even your ethnic traits, as it is when you walk in agreement with other men. There are certain principles that should circumscribe all of our lives to where wherever we are and whoever we're with, we can walk in peace and harmony with them. I raised the question, if you were dropped in a rice patch in Japan, Okinawa, Japan, would you be able to survive? Well, the more you know about the respect for other people, other ways of life, but more importantly, you're in tune with who you are and what your way of life is, it's easier for you to walk without the question about the difference in whether or not I'm black or white.
You're right.
You know? Because certainly when it's... Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Yeah. I would just say it would be a beautiful thing if one would be able to understand the importance of, you know, when a person, you know, is living life and you just don't have this particular color, you understand? And we all know that some things you just can't change. Okay, that's understandable. But what about those things that you can change? You see, and this is the thing I wanted to find out about myself. See, I'm still seeking information right now, you know, on how did that really actually happen when that's being able to go to knock on the door of someone else, you know, for butter, salt, sugar, or shirt, or whatever it is, and suddenly that we're just destroying one another, you know, and that right there is where I'm, you know, so I don't see no other ethnic group that black lives matter. I don't see, that's not where I'm at. I'm right here where we matter to one another. When are we going to stand firm on that? You know, that's my main concern, man. You know, that's my main concern, and I know it is, but that, again, it did not stop me from going out looking for that brother's daughter, which happens to be a white guy.
I got you.
It didn't stop me. I mean, as soon as I knew he had confidence in me, I received joy of knowing that at least he felt like if there's anybody that's going to do something about it, he's going to get out there and try to find it. I don't know how to go out there and do it.
Okay.
She duck and dodge me. But he can get it done. He'll find a way, he'll get it done. And I thought that was pretty unique, man.
But,
yeah.
You know, perhaps he saw that you understood the motivation for her running, her using, you know, and for her trying to fill the void in her life. And you can speak to that better than anyone else could.
Yeah, sure. And he knew that.
Right.
And that's why
I
respected him for it, you know. And and I didn't stop until I got a chance to find out whether she in his area or not, because he had confidence that I could get it done. So we have to learn. I think it's going to take some learning how to accept that you're better than I am. I'm no better than you are. You see, now if we get into the sports and all, that's another thing. You know, we get ready to play ball. Okay.
Yeah.
You understand? But I still have a mutual respect for all the people that I played ball against, you know, in Nashville. You know, we all have that mutual respect for one another. You know what I'm saying? And when we hit that court, you know, we went at it.
Mm.
However, it still didn't take away from – now, I'll be honest, man. This is when I graduated and we're out of school now. And, you know, I got a thing that I'm concerned about: north, south, east, and west.
Right.
Yeah, it was my ministry. So I hang out. I used to hang out with some of them guys on every side of town. And so remember we used to go around playing basketball on every side of town just looking for a ball game and things like that on the outside. And we would do a whole lot of winning, you know, and everything. One day we went out on the side of town, man, and these guys, man, somebody was playing with us, knew them cats out there and wanted us to go out there and play them. Man, they beat us down out there, man. But when we got finished, we went and got high together.
What?
You see?
So you got high together.
I wasn't inside the will of God then. I was God's will then.
I understand. But that was universal.
Yes, sir, man. What I'm saying is that we were still able to understand, you know, after playing ball and the guy hit the last shot and they said, get on off this court. You understand?
Right.
I can still hear the Nets pop when he hit that shot.
Wow.
We became best friends, man. We became best friends. He's the one that told me, because they called me Trick because of the basketball. He's the one told me, he said, Trick, you can do it. Talk about I can stay on drugs.
Okay.
Now, we were sitting right there together while he was on drugs, and I was on probation where I wasn't supposed to do no drugs, still slanging drugs. And he told me that I could do it. In other words, he had confidence in me that I can get free from it. And that motivated me. And I hadn't used drugs since, man, 24 years ago.
Yeah. If I might say, there are many stimulus. Some people are not addicted to drugs, but they're addicted to other destructive behavioral patterns that cause them to lose, and that cause them to become depressed, that cause them to walk away from great opportunities, man, or to even blind themselves to them. And so to your point, when there is a brotherhood where individuals encourage one another and strengthen one another to say you can do it, you can be successful. Yeah. Now, what I'm saying, what I'm getting at is that has no color.
No,
that has no color. Having said that, we certainly need to speak to our black brothers and sisters to let them know that we can first apply these principles among ourselves. And when we see it working in our families, we see it working in our neighborhoods, in our communities, in our culture, we're in a better position to reach out to other folk of other ethnicities and other cultures.
That's right.
But we got to start at home. I read somewhere that judgment begins in the house of law, start at home.
Yeah.
Amen.
Yeah, definitely.
And then it spreads abroad.
Yeah, sir. We have to do that. I couldn't share the thing with that guy's daughter until I first got myself together here. I couldn't help my community until I first helped myself. You see?
That's right.
And that's
right.
To be, man. You know, that's what I said. That was my main concern. I didn't sell drugs to white people or no
right.
other ethnic group of people. Now, I'm not saying
okay.
that. I'm not saying anything but other than I created my own community. I did that. I admit.
Okay. All right. Well, I heard you. I heard you say, "You, hey, I'm guilty."
I'm guilty.
I'm
the first to say. But how did I do that? How did I become guilty? Knowing I was so innocent. That's what I have to look at. That. How did that take place? Who would do something like that? Would put something. I mean, when I say pain, you know, inflict a whole community with something that's controlling like that. Who would do something like that intentionally?
Mm-hmm. Okay. Okay.
And you know, if I didn't have knowledge, had the wisdom, I didn't have the understanding, so you know, if I'm doing it for fun, just having fun, I pass the guy this, I try this, I pass the try this. And all of it. Don't it.
I want to, if I might, let me go to this next announcement. And when I come back, I want to answer this question. What is the matter of black lives? Somebody might phrase it, what is the matter with black lives? Or why does black lives matter? However you want to put it. Let's address that before we leave. But let me go to this announcement, then we'll come right back and see what we can get from it. We got about 12 minutes here.
Good enough.
Hello, listeners. This is your host, Reverend Reuben Dockery. Thank you for tuning in to Talk Straight on Blog Talk Radio. Here, you can share your thoughts as well as become informed about very important social issues confronting society today. Please take the time to visit my website at bfcinstitute.com. That's bfcinstitute.com to learn more about our efforts to educate, inspire, and empower disadvantaged families across America to improve the quality of life. The best way to stay in the loop of future broadcasts, times and locations for our traveling educational lecture series, and innovative ideas is to become a BFC Institute seminar participant. You may do so by clicking the Join Our Group tab on the homepage. I would be delighted to respond to your suggestions and engage you further and most transformative information. Again, thank you for joining us, and I look forward to hearing from you online.
Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery. We're talking about the evolution of blackness in America from 1920 to 2012. Grateful again to have with us our good friend and supporter, Pastor Ricky Waller. On the other side of the break here, and we do hope that you give notice to our announcements, we want you to make a contribution to our traveling series that will help our local cause here with the juvenile courts as well as sharing our national model. Go to bfcinstitute.com and to go to look at the initiative page and look at over the traveling seminar and lecture series, as well as come to understand what the parental empowerment initiative is, as well as the crime intervention advocacy campaign. Your support will help us do that at any amount that you can give.
but there are specific amounts that we ask for those to become a BFC Institute member or a general supporter and so forth and so on. When we left, we were going to talk about this last question here in terms of what is the matter of black lives. I want to share with you a physics term. You study physics. They teach that if something has mass, space, it's said to be composed of matter. Now, we often see this in terms of atoms or small molecules, but what is important to understand is, as an individual, if you just pinch yourself right now, if you don't believe me, and you feel the air around you, you take up space. And somebody has to make provisions from you from the time you're born. You come in the world. They have to make room to lay you down. Is that right? Your pampers. They have to make room to put your clothes, right? So you take up space, and you got to wait to yourself. And healthy people keep a certain body weight and a certain body mass, right? But you matter. Yes, you matter. But here's the catch right here. Here's the catch right here. If I could speak to my little sister, Alicia Garza, and Patrice, and Timothy, I would let them know, sweetie, I appreciate where your heart was, where you were trying to go. We certainly need more than just you to carry that bloodstained banner, though. And we have to understand that we have to teach our people about the importance of our heritage, which should drive the future of our young people. Your life matters because of what you do and how you carry and identify yourself. Nobody owes you anything, but you owe it to yourself to give your life value. Good thing is the Word of God teaches us how to become valuable in His sight and in the world. Matter of black lives, white lives, green lives, purple lives, however you want to call it. Lives matter because people have a place and a space in this world and in this universe. And God gave all of us universal rights, as was ascribed back in the 1920s and fought for in the 60s. And many of us kill one another over foolishness, trying to make the statement ideologically that I'm important. Just because I'm important don't mean I have to make you less important by destroying your life. It was sad that I saw in the news where here in Nashville, two brothers or cousins were involved in a shooting, and one cousin wound up killing the other cousin. I can only imagine what brought the one against the other. You understand what I'm saying? Yeah. But both of their lives matter. And I'm sure within their family, both of them had some importance, some relevance. But now that family is grieving. They lost
I've done someone's funeral like that not long ago. Was it in Nashville?
Yes, right here in Nashville. The other day, unfortunately.
Yeah, so I just had to do someone like that, man.
At the end result, yes, black lives do matter. You have to be careful about or know how you define it, what it means to be black, though. All of those social ills and behaviors that are destructive in nature cannot be attributed to what it means to be black, for sure. And when you change that, you reduce the chance of you having to face law enforcement in negative ways drastically. Many of our people haven't been taught that. And I mentioned that the ball has been dropped since 1920 all the way to today, because a lot of our young people have no clue of what the Harlem Renaissance was, what it would intend it, and what it offered. They have no clue about black nationalism. They have no clue about the civil rights struggle. They have no clue about what brothers like Brother Malcolm tried to do in terms of helping people, even after he left the Nation of Islam. They have no clue about the many efforts of people over the last 25, 30 years who have been working tirelessly to try to bring about a sense of cultural identity, cultural heritage, and unity.
And incidentally, we're in the Kwanzaa season right now. And they try to encourage those things. But there's no context for that for a lot of young people. And this is why they're wondering how much or if my life matter. Will I live when I get up tomorrow? Will I live to see the next day?
My goodness, man. Amazing. That is. I'm serious. It's amazing how look back over this, Pastor. I'm thinking in terms as we talked earlier, going from what you know, and when you don't know, you don't know.
Without, you don't know, you don't know.
You don't know. So how many people, that I would say black people, that don't know what
right.
according to the Word of God and what it says
Absolutely.
About us?
Absolutely.
Not to mention, you know, if they don't know, there's no way you can tap into it. Because, again, I
Absolutely.
Haven't always known. But I noticed
right.
that it did say in Ecclesiastes, you know, it talked about it. You know, in the 12th chapter, it tells you very plain. In the 13th verse, it talks about it. And let us hear the whole, the conclusion.
The conclusion.
Let us hear the conclusion of the whole matter. You know, let us hear the conclusion of the
yes,
whole
sir.
Matter. It talks about that.
Yes.
In the first day,
yes,
says,
I read
pure
that
God.
Somewhere. I read that somewhere.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, it's
right.
In there. It says pure God and keep his commandments.
Right.
But if we don't know, we don't know.
My
it says,
God.
For this is the whole duty of man. It says, this is the whole
Stop
duty
right
of man.
That's the word of man. That's the word of man.
It's the whole duty. It's the whole duty. Not half of it, not somewhat of it, not a little bit of it. It just says the whole duty. So in other words, you hear a little bit, you learn a little bit about what he desires us to do, and then we start to practice in it. And it sums
right.
it up. I like, well, how you sum it up for us, though? You know, for God shall bring every work into judgment. With every secret thing, whether it be good or whether it be evil. In other words, so God said, look, I know them folks who mistreat you.
Right.
But it's going to be part of
right.
the conclusion of the whole matter. I know those who are seeking to do some good. Yeah, but
okay.
let's talk about the conclusion
okay.
of the whole matter. That's
of
what I
the
think
whole
about.
Matter. I got you.
Yeah,
I
the whole matter,
you,
which means that, you know, since God so loved the world, you know, he went
that
for
he gave.
Order with that. That he gave,
yeah.
you see. His only yeah. begotten. So if I believe that, that's if I believe it. Not saying everybody have to believe that, but I only believe, trust, and lean, and depend upon my own understanding. Is why I went into a ditch like I did. I had no good
right.
instructions. But here we
right.
are right here just thinking we found out that we are somebody, man, and say, hey, I'm no longer going to exercise my pattern of thinking as if I'm going to be enslaved by any other ethnic group in the world. You know, I mean, we have to come to recognize, you see, and in that way we can stop with that self-destruction behavior because this is a
right.
pretty deep behavior, man, that, you know, and,
yes,
I, and so
yes,
utilize. Black Lives Matter would be a disgrace to me if I said anything like that when I'm doing all this harm to my community. That's why I
right.
feel so bad, knowing good well I've been
what?
Free for a long time.
Right. We just
but
got a few seconds here. We just less
yeah,
than a minute,
okay,
but you're absolutely right. It is the basis
yeah,
of destruction for Black Lives Matter and everyone
yeah.
else. We hope that you gain something, those that listen later, those that are listening live now. Call us here. Go to bfcinstitute.com. Look over the website and communicate with us and support our calls here. We're going to have to let it go now because Tamlin got the best of us yet again.
Oh,
yet
man.
Again. But we're going to leave with Brother's going to work it out, Willie Hutch, and we'll be back next Tuesday. All right.
Oh, man. Oh, man.
Make this thing work, man. We've got to get rid of the pimps and the pushers and the prostitutes and then start all over again clean.
Hey, look, nobody's pushing me anyway, okay? I mean, not you, not the cops, nobody, man. I mean, you want to get rid of the pushers, I'll help you. But don't send your people after me.
John, can you see that we can't get rid of one without getting rid of the other? We got to come down on both of them and...